Good morning. Today is Wednesday. It's January. It's the 24th. John Ford is with us this morning. Inaugural run or flight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
For what?
Allow me to be here this morning.
Oh, allowing you. I thought Madrone may have paid you to show up or something. Now, have you been warned or are you familiar with the concept of the question that starts each show?
I have not been warned, and sadly, I think I am not familiar.
Well, guess what? That trend is going to continue when you get the question here. This is kind of like the leveler for everybody. So we're in the category here of sports and leisure. I don't know, are you a sports guy?
Somewhat.
Okay, good. Well, you don't have much of a chance then. Why is a marathon race exactly 26 miles, 385 yards long?
I have no idea.
Oh, you're not even going to guess.
No.
You don't play well in the sandbox, do you?
Well, I've learned to not answer questions that I don't know the answer to.
God, now you're sounding like Mattson. All right. In 1908, the first modern Olympic marathon was designed to start at Windsor Castle and end in front of the Royal Box in London Stadium, a distance of exactly 26 miles, 385 yards. And that became the official distance. The race honored Philippides. All right, we'll just say him, who in 490 BC had run 22 miles, 1,470 yards to carry news to Athens that the Greeks had defeated the Persians on the plain of Marathon.
Interesting.
As contrasted to you or me, we got lost in the woods and we go in circles for hours at a time. If folks are unfamiliar with who John is, who's John?
John currently serves as the director of planning and building for the...
You like this third person thing?
Well...
Who is that guy? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I get to serve as the planning director and building... director of planning and building for the County of Humboldt. So that includes not only the planning function, the building function, code enforcement. We also have housing, and we work on grants.
Code enforcement. Oh, that's got to be just... the most delightful add-on to a planning and building department that I could imagine.
Though it's rough. Nobody likes to talk about code enforcement. Nobody likes code enforcement. People that call in and are upset because their neighbor is doing something they don't like. And then we investigate. And if there is found to be a violation there, then we're talking to that neighbor. And they're not happy that we're talking to us. And so everybody's generally kind of... not happy.
An elevated emotional state, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, in the cities, a lot of times that falls on the fire department. You know, if there's a safety hazard or health and safety, I guess, would be kind of what the overarching category would be. Do you get involved with that kind of stuff also? Or like restaurants that don't have the kitchen sinks that are running properly? Or is it a segment of code enforcement?
So, yeah, no, we do not do the inspections for the fire department. They do those themselves. The fire marshal does that. And then the inspections for health facilities relative to restaurants is done by the Department of Environmental Health. We don't do that unless they get to a point where they can't get it resolved. And then they have some enforcement authority, but we also have some profound enforcement authority if it needs to be used.
So you're enforcing the permit that's in place or not?
They would enforce the permit, but if it can't be brought into compliance, then it would be declared a public nuisance.
And then you guys get to play?
Right.
Notice my word, get.
Yeah. No, it's...
Oh, boy. So what is the source of the most complaints? Is it somebody out of compliance, like what we were just discussing? Is it permits? Is it some of the state building codes? What area do you have most contention on?
So it really comes down to, if I could say the most contention, comes down to neighbors not liking each other and finding a reason to complain about each other. And we saw a precipitous increase in the number of violations that were called in during the COVID period when people were home. And so they were stuck at home, looking out their windows, watching what their neighbors are doing, and calling and complaining. Our complaint level went up immeasurably as a result of that.
So rather than getting to know their neighbors during that time, they decided to do war?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it was interesting to watch that. And then within that, most of the calls relate to junk being on the site, that the property's just strewn with all kinds of stuff.
Do you think, or did your troops think, that there was just more of that accumulated garbage and stuff during that period? Or was it just a recognition that it was there?
Probably a recognition that it was there.
I guess, what was it, Barnum? Who said you'll never get poor overestimating the intelligence of the American public. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh. There's been an awful lot of discussion, John, in the last couple of years about the housing shortage that's in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every county, every jurisdiction has their own philosophy, their own approach within the legal bounds.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys determine what and how you want to play in that arena? Is it the Planning Commission? Do they have any influence? Do the five votes matter? Is this a professional determination?
It's really all of the above. So I think from the Board of Supervisors' perspective, the message that I get is housing's important. We want to see housing built. That's an unambiguous message.
Then that one hasn't changed, has it?
No.
Okay.
And then I would also say that the Planning Commission kind of has the same sentiment. For our department, when applications that involve development of housing come in, those are a priority. They need to be processed. We need to work on those. So it really is all the way through the organization of needing to recognize that this needs to be handled.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian Coconut Water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's Homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with John Ford. John's in charge of, building and planning and
right.
Et cetera, et cetera. And while the et ceteras get people's attention and excitement, isn't a vast majority of what the department does is kind of making sausage, if you will, day in and day out, and here's the protocols, and this is what we do, and this is what we check and monitor, I guess it's probably not the exciting stuff.
The day in and day out stuff is not exciting. And in fact, one of the things that I somewhat feel bad about for a lot of the employees is they're faithfully doing stuff really well day in, day out, every day. They don't get a lot of recognition for that. We try to recognize people for doing a good job, but a lot of other people that are in front of the board, in front of the Planning Commission, have a little bit more profile, and so probably get a little bit more feedback about what they do.
So as I wouldn't think anybody comes into the department looking for celebrity status. Recognition is cool.
Recognition's great.
But
yep.
Celebrity tends to mean something is a little unique that's going on differently.
And one of the things, frankly, about government is that if you're becoming a celebrity, it's usually not because you're doing a really good job. It's because people are really complaining about what's going on. And so oftentimes in government, I've learned, if you're not hearing anything, is because you're doing tremendously well. And that's a sad thing. I try to change that in my management style, but...
Well, either that or people are being ignored.
Right.
You know, and that kind of results in the same thing, but I would anticipate that if somebody wanted to do their job, wanted to be around for a long time, wanted to have that feeling of accomplishment, pride of authorship, all those wonderful phrases that we hear about, is that you'd be asking, too. You know, somebody comes up to the counter and every 2 weeks or so, hey, got a sec, how we doing? And, just kind of very casually find out how you're doing. Instead of waiting for the phone call from the soups.
Yeah.
Or some, the flares that happened at the Planning Commission.
Right. And I think we do that. I talk to the managers in the department quite a bit, and they work directly with their staff. I try to go around and do that. I can't do that with everybody all the time.
You wouldn't need an office then.
That's true. I could just manage by walking around. But I do find myself doing a lot of work as well and responding to a lot of things. And so that's part of my job that keeps me pretty on my toes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say awake at night. I would think it would be tempting for folks outside looking in to say, oh, he's a manager, she's a manager. My understanding is with pretty much everybody that I know that's at the department head level is that you're doing the do, too. We're not big enough to have somebody who's a pure manager.
I think one of the things that's really important, and it comes down to leadership style, you can have people that, kind of take a hands-off approach and say, go and do. I think in the environment that we live in, you do need to be a bit of a doer, because you got to be a mentor. You got to be able to train. You got to be able to understand what it takes to train, what it takes to teach people how to do things, and then also know enough about what's going on to look at it and say, it's like, wow, we're kind of behind the curve here, and we need to reinvent ourselves a little bit and grow and change how we're doing things. And that's been a constant process in my tenure here, is that we really are working at trying to become more efficient, become more effective, and not just continue to do things the tried and true ways that may have been done, dating back to who knows when, maybe when the water was really deep, but...
And clean.
Yeah. But so we constantly are working at improving.
Yeah, I would think that it is tempting. I mean, if you keep doing the same thing, then, continuing with our water analogy, the river is going past, and you can't stay either. You're going to be keeping abreast of, or you're falling behind. There is no staying where you are. So as you're looking at those new trends, the new opportunities that are out there, technology even, some of the AI stuff. I mean, that's got to be just absolutely mind-boggling, the potential that's there if, and this is a big if, budget wasn't an issue.
Yeah, budget's a huge issue. One of the things, I'll just step right into that one, that we've been working on is a processing program, a permitting program called Accela. And we've been trying to get to a place where we're doing everything electronically, not using paper anymore, referring things electronically. And we finally recently got to the place where we could actually accept electronic payments so we can go completely digital. And not everybody was really happy with that. But a few contractors this last week were really happy because they actually got their permits over the weekend.
Really? So they saw that time compression.
Yeah, it came
That's
in.
That's cool.
The program went through, got everything cleared, and issued it. So to them, suddenly they're seeing the benefit of this, that, wow, I can be at a job site. I can submit my application. I can then get it back electronically, and I don't even have to go and talk to the county.
Really? So the turnaround time can be that quick?
Yeah. Well, it's not that quick,
okay.
But it's within a day or two.
That's like lightning speed from what I understand.
That's a great improvement.
We don't want to get too carried away here. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. That's the clock over the one, the big one with the big numbers. That's the one I look at, even with the glasses on. We're back with John Ford from Elbow County Building and Planning Department. Probably the biggest thing that you probably have been semi-recognized for, don't want to put you out there too far, is with the pot permits. And what is, what isn't, who's paying, how much, all those types of things. That's such a fluid situation. Is it typical for the other 57 counties? Are they going through these similar gyrations trying to figure this thing out? Or is it just pure finance driven? And that's where it's coming from.
So it's a big topic. It's a big struggle in other counties as well. I think Humboldt County was unique because Humboldt's, I mean, for decades, has been recognized as a location where truly tremendous cannabis has been grown, world-renowned cannabis. And so there was kind of this built-in image for Humboldt and wanting, as legalization to occurred, to protect that and enhance that and continue with that. And so there was kind of a built-in desire on the part of the county to protect its image, to protect that industry, because it had been an important part of the economy for a long, long time. Other communities, frankly, have blown up and allowed cannabis to go in directions that are far, far above what they were or what they were before. And cannabis wasn't really being grown there. But now Santa Barbara, Monterey, Lake counties, to name some, are producing large farms. Humboldt is still largely a small.
They're still the boutique-y.
It's still a boutique kind of driven industry.
I am really curious, and I don't know if you do a lot of projection planning.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how. It's in your name. When this thing becomes federally legalized and you get RJR involved,
mm-hmm.
and they're harvesting with the use of combines rather than individual picking, how that's going to change the landscape? You know, it's got to change just because the supply is going to go crazy. And I don't think the demand is elastic. I think it's just a supply issue.
Well, it's supply and demand, but also, you know, there's the industry factor of it. And when you want to look at it from a rational standpoint, there's scale. And most people I've talked to would argue you can't grow really good marijuana at a very, very large scale. So that top shelf kind of image of Humboldt County is the place for the growers here to continue to focus on. Somebody coming in, harvesting like they were in Oregon with combines, growing hemp.
Wink, wink, nod, nod, yeah.
Exactly. Really kind of changed the landscape for a while and changed the supply side for a while. That seems to have been corrected somewhat. But also, you know, large corporations aren't going to come into a place where they can't have that kind of large-scale development, and that wouldn't be permitted in Humboldt County. Also, we're not the most centrally located place when it comes to population centers.
You mean transportation? Oh, my.
and labor supply.
Right.
You know, and trained labor forces. Some of the other counties that have a high degree of agriculture have a very trained and skilled labor force. And so that's really not Humboldt County.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, they tried to use Napa as an example, and I never really bought that one. But and no, I'm not a big fan of, but let's think tequila for a sec. Okay. You've got massive harvesting production, and then you got the top shelf. Okay, but what percentage of the marketplace is top shelf paying $100 and $150 a bottle? You know, I think Jose is probably the dominant player, kind of like Ernest and Julio Gallo.
Right.
Isn't, by volume, they're the number, or by gallons or tonnage, mm-hmm. or whatever it's measured by, is the number one producer of wine.
Right.
Okay, but nobody brag, you know, you don't put your pinky out for E&J. So I'm just, seeing this as a marketing equation, I wonder if there's enough marketplace to keep the prices where they were historically in Humboldt County. And now that they're legal, well, most are legal, they've got payroll taxes. They've got ADA compliance. They've got workers' comp. They've got all these costs that regular business guys and gals have been dealing with for years that were not in their equation. And now they're wondering why they're not able to make as much money as they were before. Well, because you're in business now. You're not outlaw. You're inside of the law. And then the pressures come to you. Hey, it's costing me too much to do what I want to do, so you need to reduce your cost.
Yeah, well,
didn't work with the FCC for me, by the way.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really work well. I think it is a matter of looking at this as a business and understanding that it is a business. And many people, even when, like in the non-cannabis sector, when we get applications, people come in, try to open a business. The average business lasts 3 to 5 years. And so I think we were looking at this when we began the permitting process, recognizing that we would see a tremendous number of permits, but from a long-term sustainability process, that may not be the number that ends up being sustainable for Humboldt County.
Yeah, after the marketplace does what the marketplace does.
Equalizes, right.
Yeah, and then you throw in the scale.
So the thing that we don't want to do as regulators, though, is we don't want to dictate who can be successful in the marketplace. We want to protect the environment. We want to protect the communities. We want to do the things we're responsible for. And then if people can come in and operate within that paradigm and be successful, go and be blessed.
Yeah, I would think that you got to be neutral. You know, if it's a house, it's a house. If it's a grow, it's a grow. If it's a retail set, it's a retail, whatever.
Right. Right.
It just is what it is, and you guys flavor it, and you figure out where the magic is, but here's the base.
That's the approach. It's you know, and a lot of people struggle with that. A lot of people struggle with cannabis. Yes, being legal.
And, oh, okay. I was saying needing to treat it as a special or unique category and either get benefits or, as you were indicating, have to run the gauntlet a little bit further.
Yeah. So, you know, that's been something that's been interesting to watch, how that has transpired. But it's becoming more normal now. And it's...
Now we can argue that for a long, long time. But we've got a commercial break.
Okay.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with John Ford from Humboldt Building and Planning. Where is AI going to come into play? You kind of alluded to it a little bit, that you've got some of the automated programs, which I would think would be opportunity for everybody to jump up and down. I mean, you got some dinosaurs like me that, yeah, okay, you send me something digital, I'm still going to print the darn thing out because I need a doodle on it.
Right, right.
And I need the paper or the tactile. But, you know, mm-hmm. I still buy retail, too, instead of on the internet as much as possible. So I realize that I'm not, probably not even the majority, because it's time. Is there a recognition now, John, from everybody that the value of time?
Absolutely. Time is cost. And so it used to be that cost in government service didn't really matter that much, but it's gotten to a point where we have to take seriously how much does it cost us to do this? And we track that closely and look at whether or not we're operating within what should be and within the budget that we have and within the amount of money that we take in from a customer to be able to provide the service that they're asking for us.
Do you have, here comes, let's say, just a regular house plan.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's no such thing, but spot me on this one. This should take X number of hours. And if it takes longer than X hours, you kind of, it's not on the builder to say, why is it taking longer, or to defend why it's taking longer. You look at staff and go, okay, how come you've had to play with this thing four or five times? Why isn't it done and off of our shelf and out? Is there that kind of peer review that goes on?
We are often asking those questions, absolutely. And so one of the things, for instance, trying to improve our process that we used to do as a courtesy and to try to provide good customer service is that we would take in plans that we know are incomplete and wait for the applicant to come in and make them complete, and then we do the plan check and do some other things. And then what ended up happening is I was getting complaints. It's like, you've had that set of plans for 9 months. But 8 of those months, it was incomplete. And so one of the things we changed is like, look, we're not accepting incomplete plans anymore. Because when we do that now, we can better track from the moment it comes in the door what we're doing with it, how long is it sitting someplace. You know, do we have a queue that's building up that we need to address so that we can look at the system and understand where exactly things are going, how they're moving through the system, where they're getting stuck, and where we need to apply support.
How long is fair to expect? I mean, is it...
So just not all permits are the same. Some permits can be issued over the counter. We've been working at making sure that we can get things that should be issued quickly, issued more quickly, so that not everything goes into the same queue, follows the same widget trail, and you know, comes out.
Not everybody's waiting for the Indiana Jones ride.
Right.
Somewhat the teacups. It's a little quicker to get to the teacups.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So when you're thinking about a house, one of the things we try to do is get to a house, you know, get to the plan check within 10 working days. And then get the comments turned back around. We've tried to, we used to send an inspector out to look at it before we do the plan check. What we're trying to do now is send it to plan check and have the inspector go out and look at it simultaneously so that things come back together, reducing that amount of time. So it's not sequential, it's now more of a simultaneous process.
I would think that that's been well received.
I hope people are seeing the difference, frankly.
Or just having a complete set of plans.
Well, there were some complaints about that at first.
Because of change?
Change is always hard. But the other thing is that the other thing that people used to do was wait until they got through their plan check to do their plumbing, which is fire sprinklers, and to do... there's something else that they used to hold off on, and they didn't like to have that done all at the same time.
Because the sprinkler guy is looking to make sure that there are no changes, or it just takes longer for certain things to come back and be done?
You got to get through the design and then send it to the sprinkler guy. They could submit it to the county and then have the sprinkler guy working on it while it's in our queue, which from a timing standpoint isn't bad. From them, if they're going to follow through immediately. But one of the reasons we changed that is you get to the end and they find out that, wow, it's really too expensive to sprinkler that, so we want to make structural changes.
And then you go back through the...
Yeah. So it's like, no, let's just make sure we're looking at what it's going to be up front at one time, and that allows us to just deal with it, get it done, get it reviewed.
Certainly, it went faster for you guys, but now if the sprinkler guy is holding things up, you're not building the house and then the sprinkler component, so it may take the project longer.
It could.
Based on who your subs are.
But you've got to, as a builder, you've got to be thinking, what do I need to get done to get into the planning and building department? And you've got to sequence that and let the plumber know that, hey, it's coming your way.
And the owner.
Yeah,
communication. It's funny how it all boils down to the same thing, isn't it?
It is.
Well, hey, thanks for coming by. Hopefully this wasn't too tough.
Not at all.
Hard-hitting. And see everybody tomorrow.